Financial educator David England joining me in the studio. First off, Dave, it's good to see you again.
It's always good to see you, Thomas. Thank you.
Now, the thing that I think I want to point out here this morning, number one, this may, and Dave's made a commitment in case of emergencies he'd come, but this will be David's last appearance on the Morning News Watch.
Yes, sir. This is going on 20 years.
20 years.
At least. Man, what an opportunity to be able to come on and share what I have developed as far as a trade and a brand. And, you know, back years ago when fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, when I had that AM pocket radio, listened to Cardinal baseball, I had no clue that I'd be able to do this down the road. So, man, I just want to thank you and the listeners, Tom, and appreciate
Dave,
it.
Dave always answered the phone. And I wouldn't always be asking him for, you know, an appearance here on the show and to take questions. I was asking because I don't understand this. Can you tell me, right? I mean, I used him as a source of personal information when I was like, you know, sometimes I get very strong opinions and I think, you know, I'm acting in a bubble. Maybe I should get a different perspective. And I found Dave was always good for that as well. So I want to thank you for 20 years and we'll talk more about that in a minute. But our listeners are already asking questions.
Let's hit them. Let's hit it.
Now, this is interesting. They want to talk about debt. World debt crisis. There are 198 countries on Earth. Are all 198 countries in debt? And if not, which countries aren't? You know what? It's an interesting question. If the richest nation in the world is $25, $26 trillion in debt.
Correct.
You must think everybody else is there too.
One thing we need to look at is, yeah, there are some countries that are fiscally responsible and they're honest and actually have a balanced budget amendment that their politicians don't get paid unless they balance their budget. It's not this card game that we have here in our state and our country. So there are a small number, but what we need to look at, not just that 27, which is goes up.
Macau.
Okay, there's one.
One.
But what we need to look at.
Debt to GDP ratio, Macau, 0%, Hong Kong, 0.3%, Zimbabwe, 2.4%, Brunei, a lot of money in that country, 3.2.
So there are some. But what we need to look at, Tom, is the ratio between our debt and our GDP. And we're well over 100%, but we're so far under what it's like in Japan and other countries. But, you know, the good book tells us about don't be a slave to your debt, but we are becoming that more and more on a daily basis.
Here comes a question for David from Bill. Bill says, Tom, would you please ask David his suggestion on the best way to hedge against the current round of inflation?
Okay, well, first of all, we appreciate Bill taking the time to listen and send in the question. Inflation is here. We've been warning about that for the last year or so. A lot of it is stimulated by our policies that we have, and it all stimulates on that so-called, what we used to call a hidden tax, that's our fuel cost. But when you take a look at what a barrel of crude cost this time last year versus it is now and where it's going, as far as inflation goes, it's going to be here. So what we need to do is to take a look at those areas that go up under inflationary times. Number one, it's energy. Now, you don't want to be too much in energy, but we still have room to run in energy. So be overweight those areas that actually go up in inflation. Take a look at selected REITs, because whenever we have inflation, we invest in the hard assets that will go up too, in real estate and in REITs. Now, with a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust, got to be selective, but we don't get those calls in the middle of the night that the hot water heater or the toilet is clogged. So there are ways to take a look and to increase your financial wealth during inflationary times.
All right. Now, David touched on something, and that's energy. Because when you look at the situation we're in, you know, energy is involved in everything in one way or another, whether it's making it or getting it where it needs to be. And then, of course, you've got energy with the winter, and the European Union is already trying to figure out a way to secure energy for this coming winter because they don't have enough alternative energy, and 90% of their natural gas comes from Russia, and prices are up. There are a lot of concerns about this, not just in America. You saw the recent government figures on how much more we'll pay for energy this year. Because when you talk about inflation, I mean, is there – let me roll this back just a little bit. When we talk about inflation, we see it in the grocery store because – I think it's where we spend our most money. You look and you see this gone up,
yes.
This max a number. I don't understand the disconnect between the really high prices in grocery stores, and they are really high, and how well the Wall Street's doing. I would think that there'd be some kind of correspondence or reaction in Wall Street. I don't see it, or maybe I am, and I don't understand what it is.
It could be confusing, Tom, but as the analogy I've always had, Wall Street and Main Street are never on the same plane. And whenever we see these prices going up, that profitability has not yet hit our large corporations. They have found a way to become even more profitable as it goes on. But eventually that's going to stop. But another reason why Wall Street continues to make new highs as far as like Bitcoin, which is highly speculative. We talked about Bitcoin for many, many times in the opportunity.
It was dead 2 weeks ago, and now this week it's the hottest thing since sliced white bread again.
Because that is the risk on trade now that used to be gold and silver. But when you take a look at our Wall Street is still going up because that is where the world invests, not just you and I, but the world. The worse it gets geographically, take a look at how bad things are with a lot of emerging markets. Those dollars come to our Wall Street because those people, wherever they are in the world, can sit down in front of their laptops, their device on their hand, and trade and invest all day long. You don't have to be here. So it's the global money coming into this country that continues. Plus, when you take a look at—
Because they feel it's safer in where they're at right now. This is my chance. This is how I hedge. This is how I grow insecure because I have to make an adaptation.
It's a clean— And I think it was Bill Gross that said this. It's the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry.
Been there, done that. All right. Now, listening to us, inflation and cost of energy. Phil just sent me a text. He says, I this morning received a text from Ameren telling me that my electric bill is going from $225 to $275 starting next month. I sent a quick question back to him saying, are you on the equalizer plan? He said, yes. That's a big jump.
Yes.
Especially if you're fixed income. We'll continue to see this affect so many different things as we go. Now, here's another one. This was brought to my attention while I was at the tailgate on Saturday. I was talking to my friend Norm. And Norm says, you know, I've been doing this and, you know, this. I've been trying to, you know, kind of play in the markets a little bit. And he says, and I said, so what's your secret? He says, I like to buy good companies that are having a bad day.
Yes.
What's that mean?
Well, you have a company that comes out with, they miss in earnings or they are in a lawsuit or something is going to happen. Wall Street will take them out back and their stock will be trading down 5, 10, 20% within 2 or 3 days of that. In fact, Tom, when I was teaching, I had a own strategy called the Heartbreak Hotel. We would wait and see companies, case in point like Merck years ago, Ford years ago with their tire situation. We would see Wall Street just, they will plummet that stock. Well, I had my own strategy to be able to take advantage of that.
Well, like Sinclair TV dropped this week. They had a Russian hack attack, and they dropped like 3 points.
Yes. Look at what happened to
Snapple. But that'll be over.
Oh, sure it
right?
will be, because at some point in time, the fear will be over, and buyers will come in and buy that stock. Look at what happened to Snap overnight.
Right. All right. So I'm talking to another friend last night, and he says, what are you talking about? Buying the dip? Is this good companies having a bad day? Is that the same thing as buying the dip? Because he said, look, in my experience buying the dip, you've got to be patient. Don't think you're going to be a day trader and make $1 million tomorrow. If you're willing to buy the dip, you've got to be willing to hang around for a while to see your money come back sufficiently to really make money on this concept. David?
Okay, in that question, those are two different things. Buying companies that their stock has gone down 10 to 15% or more versus buying the dip, that's pretty much focusing on indexes when we've had a 5 or 10% pullback. Recently, after a 5% pullback with the indexes, the dip buyers come in. That works until it doesn't. But Tom, one of the easiest ways to lose money is go in and buying what we think are good companies. What's the definition of a good company?
Right.
It's got to be a profitable company.
Okay.
Just because we use the product does not mean it's a good company to buy.
Right.
Take a look at you like to talk about Gillette.
Sears. Kmart.
Use all those. Yeah, where are they now?
Where? I mean, Sears? Sears isn't going anywhere. I'm going to invest.
How'd that work out?
Once upon a time, terrible story, the stock market had hit the trash can. It was really down. I was working with a guy that's known as Briggs Gordon, also known as Uncle Briggs, the children's show host.
Yeah.
We chuck a couple of bucks in a hat, and he gets to buy stock, and I get to buy stock.
Okay.
All right. He picked the production company for the Gong Show. I picked Navistar, the truck manufacturer. I don't know where my money is, but
how'd that work out?
I felt Navistar was the right way to go because I figure we're going to have to be around. They make the trucks that drive supplies, then they're going to be around longer than the Gong Show. Just, I bought the dip. It was really a fall off a cliff then.
Yeah. So people say, well, I buy good companies. What's a good company?
What's a good company?
We need to buy profitable companies. If you're, but
what was good yesterday may not be tomorrow. Apple, Amazon, remember?
Sure.
You're going to speculate on Amazon? What, are you crazy?
Yeah.
They're a failed company. They can't make their shipments. They got what? They do books?
How that, you know, if you bypassed Amazon, how'd that work out for you?
Right.
But once again, you can either chase stocks and make sure it's not chasing rabbits down a hole. What I always teach is to focus more on the indexes. So those stocks are in there, and those indexes, if they have some dogs in there, they get kicked out, and the new upcoming stocks get added to the index. It's a far safer strategy, and by the way, you can sleep at night with that strategy.
Right, because people are looking for ways to secure their future, not be afraid what's around the corner by having a little cushion here, and they see an opportunity here in the markets. But, you know, there's the educational term when we get through here, because now is a teachable moment in the stock markets.
If people want to learn, you know, as a proverb, it goes back thousands of years, and I don't know who came up with it. I wish I could give them credit. I don't know. But it's very simple. The teacher will appear when the student is ready. If the student's not ready, they can see all this education in front of them. You know, I've been teaching financial, I've been as a teacher since 1987 to 2013 at John A. Logan, which had such a great opportunity to be able to teach there, and also as an alma mater, you know, previous student there. I've taught financial education since 2002. I've answered many, many questions. And by the way, when I walk out this door, that door shuts. But Tom, the financial education, I've had many, many people say, well, I'm going to take your class. Well, where have you been since 2002? I'm done. I'm moving on to different, more exciting things. So, but until there's a need to learn, people's time and energy is filled up with other things. We're all guilty of that.
Right. Now, when you look out and you see fear-mongering,
yes,
it has a cumulative effect. Even if you think you're bulletproof, you get soaked in it enough, it does have an effect, some to varying degrees.
Sure.
You go to the grocery store, you see, yikes. You go try to have your Ram truck fixed, and it's a 2008, and they can't get the sensor for the transmission. You're going to have to wait 3 to 4 months because it's in China or a container ship and one of 100 off the coast. And you think, well, I've got to have my truck because I need it for work tomorrow. I got to haul my tools, got to get to work, right? And then you say, well, I'm going to run down to the car lot and buy a new one and don't have one.
Exactly. We're in unprecedented times, Tom.
And so that lends to that skittish, I mean, tentative nature. What I used to be able to get at a parts store in 10 minutes now takes 10 days. Now, Dave suffers from optimism on an epic level. And, you know, and here's the thing. I've been around a couple of disasters myself, and there's one thing. We have a tendency to get through them, but it's not really much fun in the process.
Correct.
But there are things you can do to get to the other side successful, happy, if not more wealthy, at least keeping your nose above the proverbial financial waters.
One of the biggest problems that people have is they waste too much time on things that they can do nothing about, and then they don't make good decisions. We need to make sure that we know what's going on in our environment.
So
we can make better decisions to provide for our families and to take a look at opportunities. But so many people get caught up in the negative, because negative sells. It does. That's proven. We know that. They get caught up in the negative, and so they have zero energy left to be able to take advantage of opportunities. What I like to do is don't take advantage of opportunities, is to make opportunities. Tom, with the many tools that we have in front of us, we have more opportunities today than ever in our lifetime. The question is, what are we going to do with them?
What is Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen thinking when she uses the term reset?
Oh, my. Okay, first of all, she's associated with the Fed,
which has their own problems right now because of them. They've been trading,
sure,
knowing in advance The Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, it's now between $1 and $5 million, you know, widespread there, you know, $4 million spread.
Right.
Was surely privy to inside information, who was getting money from the Fed, who was getting, you know, assistance, and then acting accordingly and coming out on the good side. Three vice chair Feds are already gone.
Yes.
And, you know, this is another big deal now. Now you've got Yellen talking about the Great Reset.
Well, we're in the middle of a great reset now because of what the law of second and third effects from COVID. And then during COVID, I said, well, we're in the new abnormal. Well, now we're in the great reset. How is the world going to adjust and prosper from what has happened whenever a worldwide pandemic hits? But a couple of those things, that's a prime example. There's probably been more time wasted by people trying to figure out what the Fed's going to do than any other thing that's out there right now. First of all, I could care less what the Fed does, and I'm not going to get sucked into countless hours trying to figure out what they're going to do, because what they say they're going to do and what they do are two different things.
Very often.
The Fed has never at one point in time affected my happiness. But once again, as far as opportunities, due to some of the Fed's actions, have been able to lower our interest rate so that we get, if we decide, if we have to borrow money, that it they drop the cost of the money. So the Fed, the action of the Fed is not all bad.
Right. And we saw this over the last couple of weeks because people, when they started realizing mortgage rates were going back up, they went out as quick as they could and they bought new homes at the lower rate because they knew they were going away.
Sure it was. One of the things I'm going to be doing when I leave here after a while, or in a few minutes, I'm going to finish up a 25-year real estate project. Going down to see my buddy Steve Cook, one of the best bankers we've ever had in the Midwest, and I'm going to wrap up a 25-year project with the lowest mortgage I've ever had in my life.
Right.
Okay? So once again, we take what the Fed has put out there, we use it to our benefit, but I have not wasted countless hours trying to figure out. And also, they've made movie stars and celebrities out of the Fed governors. You know, then the Fed governors get out and they got to have their ego stroked,
right,
their publicity, and then what the Fed chairman says, and then the other governors contradict it. It's its own media. It's its own circus in itself. I could care less what they do. I'm going to figure out what happens and then use that information to make the best educated decision I can.
All right, we're running out of time, so we're going to hit some questions, all right?
Let's hit it.
This comes from Jim. He says, what are Dave's thoughts on precious metals and timing right now?
At one point, and first of all, Jim, thank you for listening, and thanks for the excellent question. At one point in time, the precious metals, that was the fear trade, and the precious metals industries have been very, very successful at putting the image out there or the word out there that that's the protection of, against inflation. It's not. That's not a 100% statement. If that's the case with all these trillions that's been put into the market and trillions of debt, then silver should already have been tested its previous high of 39. What's it trading at now?
I don't know. What
22.
Is it? 22. 22. Right.
Gold would have already been. So what's happening is the new risk trade is crypto. Has been for a while.
Not precious metals.
Exactly. Now, I'm not saying don't.
I never even begin to think about it because I do not categorize those things in the same column even remotely because it just, and gold doesn't have any intrinsic value.
And doesn't pay a dividend. But as far as gold and silver, I think that it's wise to have some of that in your portfolio just in case we'd ever get into a bartering situation. Huh?
Here's a statement sent in by someone. I don't have a name with this. He says, I had David England as a business teacher for one class back at John A. Logan in maybe 2000 or 2001. The guy's sharp and teaches well. Later find out he was a student of retired SIU professor Don Perry, who spoke highly of him. I'd say at the time I had England as a teacher, I didn't know what kind of teacher I actually had. They're meaning this as a compliment. They just really weren't aware just how good you were at the time.
Doc Perry was my marketing professor at SIU. Doc Perry picked it whenever I started a business back in 1987. He picked up the phone. I was in his office. He called somebody, said, I need you here to cut the ribbon for one of my students. Didn't ask him. Says, I need you here. When we decided to cut the ribbon, Mr. Douglas, Eddie Albert.
Oh.
Pulled up in a limo.
Love Southern Illinois. Eddie Albert, huge fan of Southern Illinois.
Yes, with at that point in time, a politician we didn't know that much about named Paul Simon. But here comes this limo into our office in Carbondale, back behind Carpet Corner, and he cut the ribbon. I learned so much from Don Perry. Heron native. I tell you what, I miss him daily. And Rick, he was one of my first mentors in education.
Rick Pearson said that was, I was, he just says, Rick Pearson, that's who I was in your class. And I don't normally do last names, Rick, but I appreciate you taking the time, Rick. Here's another one from John. Says, always a great interview with David England. Sorry to hear it'll be his last. And Dave's well. He's just changing his way. He's going to go on and try. He's going to go out and be happy. Go do his thing.
Tom, I've been a workaholic for decades. And I don't say that with pride, but it's just the fact. I've also been blessed with two successful careers, one in education and one in the real world of business. So while everybody else has been playing throughout the years, I've been working on projects. Those days are over. I'm going to get out and enjoy stuff while I still can.
All right. Now, here's the interesting thing about Dave, and what put him in this position was failure is what motivated you to move quicker and faster, because you thought, what happened to me in this stock market crash? I'll never let that happen to me again. And you had a fundamental change, which people come to at their own time. Probably somebody listening right now may be close to that change too, going, no, I'm gonna find the right way, and I'm never gonna let this happen to me again.
And you know, my first into the market was 1987. I sold my pop-up trailer. Oh man, I missed my pop-up trailer. For $800, put that money in the market. I had a good 4 months before the crash in 87. And I swore off the market. Well, come to find out, it was the best thing in town to be able to build financial wealth outside of building a business. So I built businesses and sold them plus in the market. But my goal was to find out the truth about the market and use that as a tool to build financial wealth for me and my family. But it's getting to the truth, and that's one of the things, Tom, I've been able to do, is we put a lot of truth on the table in the last 20 years here.
Yeah.
I hope a lot of people have been able to take advantage of it.
Well, I want to personally thank you for being such a good friend and a great guest to have in the studio.
Oh, man.
I look forward to any time I get you in the studio. Dave, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. 20 years of interviews, so thank you.
You know, Tom, people don't realize how coveted this little 2x2 square is that I'm here. The people that you've had here, I'm going to say the important people, but the most important people are the folks that are listening out there. So I do appreciate the questions. I appreciate the support throughout the years. And, you know, when this door shuts here in about 5 minutes, some really exciting ones go on. And I appreciate the opportunity, Tom. And I just want to know, from Southern Illinois, I just want to let you know, people in Southern Illinois, you are loved, man.
Well,
what we have here is such an opportunity. You know, I do business internationally. You don't see this around the country. So my cap to you, thank you for going over and above decades. And I'll speak for Southern Illinois here. You are loved, man.
Can't tell you how much I appreciate that, David.